Hey listeners, just jumping in quickly before the podcast to notify you about the Bodytrack Academy educational webinars that we have available via Eventbrite. We cover a variety of topics ranging from oncology, musculoskeletal rehab, neurological rehab, mental health, performance, and much more, all of which you can access 24/7. That means you can purchase the webinar and watch it at any time that suits you. You can claim our webinars as PD points via SS self-assessment tool, and as a valued listener of the podcast, you're entitled to $10 off any of our webinars, but do hurry because the code is only available to the first 10 purchases. Just use the code FIRST10. So head on over to Eventbrite and browse our webinars. The link is in the show notes and on the Bodytrack Academy Facebook page. I'd like to begin this podcast by acknowledging the Yagara and the Turrbal people as the traditional custodians of Meanjin, the lands on which our podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Welcome to the Bodytrack Academy podcast, created by EPs for EPs. The podcast will take you on an in-depth understanding of everything an EP is faced with on a day-to-day basis, including clinical, personal, and business practices, to ensure you become the best practitioner possible. If you enjoy the podcast, make sure you like, share, follow us on whatever streaming service you use to ensure the message spreads and you are notified of any new podcasts or educational resources available to you. Furthermore, if you're not already part of our online academy, head over to Facebook and join the Bodytrack Academy. Happy listening.
Welcome back to an episode of the Bodytrack Academy podcast. I thought we'd mix it up today and get the man from behind the mic out in front and really start to see some of his critical thinking in a clinical sense. So we're going to go through a bit of a case study here with Daniel around a new client that he's been seeing and just really pick his brain on what his thought process is along the way. So Daniel, without further ado, jumping in, do you want to talk us through the sort of initial consultation and what this client is seeing you for?
Definitely. I finally am in your pressure booker. This is what I usually do to you and other EPs. So this is going to be fun, picking apart the clinical aspects of me. And I'm sure, Josh, you'll chime in with what I can do better. But without further ado, this client I had presented first with an enhanced primary care plan from their GP. The one thing that I will like to show is that you can get some enhanced primary care plans that are going to be very detailed, and then you're going to get ones that I got, which said osteoarthritis and return to lifting weights.
Yeah.
So going into that, I think a message that I want to make sure was coming across today in today's podcast for any EP, but young listeners as well, is what you receive on a referral is not always going to be the exact case of the person. You can't really build a profile from that. And it's very important not to assume from that too, because given that scenario, someone who has osteoarthritis and they just want to return to lifting weights, that could mean a myriad of things. That could mean they're just out of action. They could be in severe pain, tons of different things. So just as a point there, you have to do your subjective assessment of the client to really unpack what's going on. So that's pretty much what I did for this client. I middle-aged lady, very active person, but active in the sense of a lot of walking, yoga, Pilates, Tai Chi, participated in mats, and not a lot of resistance training in the repertoire at this stage. But the presentation from this lady was quite interesting in the fact that she brought in her scans of her spine and they scanned her whole spine and found arthropathies and osteoarthritis and osteoarthritic changes. So from that, I kind of explained per se what osteoarthritis is because she was a little bit unsure of that, but she did have a good grasp in general on what her condition was. But I readdressed that. She had been to other allied health and found that there wasn't much progress. She had gone through physiotherapy to receive treatment, and she probably wasn't as diligent, I guess, with their exercises there. So I decided to unpack a few things and say, okay, what has been addressed? Where is your situation is now? What are your expectations? All of those key questions that we already ask in initial assessments. But then I took the route of saying, have you actually been informed about what chronic pain is and how it can be treated effectively? And that is kind of my in per se of what the point of difference was.
Yeah.
So from that, I went down the pathway of explaining the biopsychosocial model, which was completely new to her. What I probably didn't expect from this is probably some reservations or some heightening of her condition by me bringing those things up and saying how each thing can affect the other, right? Yeah. So that model that we know, biological, psychological, and social elements, and how they can all play a part in how someone's pain is presented. But by bringing that up, that was pretty much the first session. I didn't even get into any objective. There wasn't any room for questionnaires. There wasn't any room for some testing per se, because it was very much an exploration of her current situation. And then from that, left it from that position to them rebook in. And she was already doing some exercises that she was feeling comfortable with. So I left it at that, but provided her some resources around the BPS model.
Yep.
Okay.
Just sort of draw back, and I think it's a really good point for people in that initial meeting of a client as well, particularly practitioners. It's what signs or what did you delve into that subjectively that made you go, okay, well, a biopsychosocial model is what I need to approach with her now. This is increased education is going to be beneficial for her.
I think it was a combination of what her exercise history was and what treatment she's actually had done. So a lot of the things were like, I've gone to a personal trainer and I've actually participated in a weights regime and was not too bad with that. So she always had it wasn't like exercise was foreign to her. She was very familiar with it and very in tune with what her body was capable of doing. She had been to physiotherapy and received different modalities of treatment. So from manual therapy to exercise prescription and the likes, but wasn't finding much progress. And sorry, not finding much progress to the personal trainer either. She was also doing Tai Chi, as I mentioned, finding that was soothing for herself, as she said, but wasn't finding this reduction in pain. Pilates, there were some movements in that. She felt exacerbated her pain. So then what I also picked up on these things here was going, there's a lot that this person is trying to fix her pain per se, and actually come and build that into the fact of the biopsychosocial model, BPS model, going, okay, well, I feel like this person at the moment is just perhaps getting into the sense of clutching at things to try and get a fix. So also adding that into the element and educating, those are probably the key warning signs I had. And I was a bit further down the path of her trying to manage and fix these issues that she had for her lower back and neck pain, which is predominantly what happened with the osteoarthritis issue presented. So that's the turning point. I went, okay, the other side of this is talking about that educational aspect for this patient. I think they would get some really good outcomes from that. The secondary part of that is there was a few tears.
Yes.
Because it was a bit of an emotional unveiling of all these things of I've tried and this has failed and I've tried, this has failed. And the language, the terms that were used were very negative on this person as well. So, yeah, that's where I decided, okay, I'm using this as more of an educational aspect rather than just exercise prescription, which I felt would be similar to the other things that she's done.
And whilst confronting those, sometimes those emotional explorations reveal that you're on the right track as well, rather than necessarily, you know, shying away from those. You know, we've had conversations in the past about having those tough conversations with your with your clients as well, and that seems to have been almost a confirmation of that you were in the right track for her.
Yeah.
So you've seen her initially. Obviously, there's this deluge of information that you just got from her. What's the next step? Where are you? Where was your mind at for the next session or the next interaction with this person?
Yeah. So I followed up with an email post the initial. I said, you know, yeah, that was a lot to take in. So just jotted down a few points that we did discuss and provided her with a few resources. One I will shout out to, I use a lot of it in my education for myself, but also for clients with Curable Health. And it's a page that I follow on Instagram, but they have a really good website and resources and things that you can actually subscribe and pay for. The thing I like about that, I have identified already these kind of negative language that she was bringing upon herself. Curable Health is all about shifting the dynamic. Josh, you've seen it, I know as well. So it is very much about reframing a lot of the things that can sit in your mind with someone with chronic pain of the limitations they have in life. So I thought that was a really good pathway forward for her. She responded really well to that, took it on board, probably took it on board too far from what my understanding, because she actually subscribed to the actual program.
Yeah.
So from that, I wasn't expecting that. And then that became another voice of opinion per se. So I was now sort of seeing myself going, all right, so I'm giving my opinion. She's obviously getting opinions from family and other people, other allied health that she was seeing, you know, two at the time, all the different programs that she was involved. So there's a lot of different opinions. And I went, okay, probably need to address that aspect as well. So it kind of just steamrolled a little bit, and it is an important thing to probably bring that expectation forward initially, which I could have done better. I said, instead of just saying, hey, here's this great website, this is how I use it, maybe taking some snippets from that and saying, this is what I've found, and provide with that rather than just go and explore yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So giving a bit more direction there, I think, is something I could have done. But the end result with this client, we did end up going down and uncovering a few social limitations that they had due to their pain. They also recognized that there were some psychological stresses with family and other things in their life as well. And so I used that cup analogy in pain. I was like, so imagine your cup, it's getting pretty full. These things only added to it and tip it over and can actually exacerbate the pain that you're experiencing. Coupling that with how the resources that provide around Curable Health to try and show, okay, well, if you're thinking of it this way and basically tying it all together, I was hoping for some success and progress for this, for this patient. So that's sort of where we were leading towards after the first few sessions.
Okay. I think it's, I love when we talk about this stuff, because I think your perspective on things is the epitome of holistic, in that you take into account everything that's sort of going on, both from yourself as well. And I think sometimes as practitioners, we can go, well, the client's dealing with all this. It's almost hard for us to add more to that. And I think you've sort of reflected really well on maybe, okay, this is where I could have added a little less or been a little bit more filtered in what in what I did. I'd love to get your impression on with that cup analogy, or any analogy when it revolves around sort of high stresses in life. I think we've all encountered people where we've gone, look, we need to manage your stresses, because we know, obviously, through research, how much that's going to exacerbate your pain response and everything like that.
Yeah, sure.
How do you have the conversation where they turn around, they go, okay, well, work's a stressor, but I can't change that. Life's like family, kids, that's a stressor. I can't get rid of my kids. You know, that's a challenge. Like, what sort of conversations or points do you sort of pull them with them?
The non-modifiable ones are very hard. I think, again, it comes back to what I tend to rely back on is the positive frame of mind change. And that's where, again, not that I'm a paid promoter of it, but the Cure All does still a really good job of that.
We might have to leave it.
might do that. I find that really helpful, and it changes perspective.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to listen to our podcast, and we hope you're learning a lot in this particular episode. Just a shout out to our sponsor, HGG Performance, which provide very high quality, innovative gym equipment and custom fit outs to enable you to pivot your potential and smash performance and rehab goals. They are world renowned for their innovative creations in the gym accessory space, including the best-selling ISO Tib LT, Tib Bar, Wrist Axe, and Nordic Bar. And I got to say, we're using some of these equipment in our clinic and finding some great results. Used by professional sports teams, athletes, and coaches worldwide, as well as the military, health practitioners, and apparently even Joe Rogan uses their gear. HGG is a proudly Aussie-owned company that makes all their gym equipment at their Gold Coast HQ. And our partnership with them, we are stoked to offer you 10% discount on any product with the code BODYTRACK10. So you can experience what all the hype is about yourself. So jump over to their website, go to the checkout, punch in the code of BODYTRACK10 to get 10% off on any of their great innovative gym equipment and start using today. Thanks very much.
The other thing though is I'm a really big believer in there's something that can be modified in your behaviors of life. Sure, there's things like job that you might be feeling you have to do to then support family, to then support yourself. I sort of think it is that's a little bit of a backwards way in essence, because if you're doing something that is causing a huge amount of stress and you feel yourself spiraling out of control, something has to be modified and you have to want to make that change to live in a life that you want to do. So I do provide the resources, positive change of mind, and changing that frame and mindset. But the other part too is I do focus on those goals of what is a value-based goal. So it's not I want to be pain-free. Like it's going that extra step further in your goal establishment and going, what does that mean to you? What are you actually able to do, or what are you refraining from yourself from doing? And for this lady, she was like, I'm not going to walk anymore because it hurts too much. And when I sit and have coffee, I can't sit down for longer than 10 minutes because it's painful and I don't enjoy it. So I'm removing myself from that social situation. I want to return to that. That was one of the things. Mm-hmm. I enjoy going to the gym, but I'm so frightened of hurting myself. So you kind of start to hear all these things and watch how your client says it. They're very emotional, which this lady was, about it. It means tons to them.
Yeah.
That's your value-based goal. So you place emphasis on that as much as possible to go, I'm with you here and I can help. It's going to take time. I'm not going to say it's goodbye tomorrow. I'm trying to give you as most appropriate resources as possible to get you to back to feeling safe with those activities that bring you joy in life. The other thing I'll just say with goals, always have an action plan associated with it.
Yeah.
Because the amount of times you and I, Josh, have probably seen clients who have goals that are just not pain related at all. It might be weight loss or it might be strength improvement. Okay, well, how are you going to do that? And they kind of go, well, I don't know, I see you for that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a good start. What else can you do? So always having action plan that they are saying to you, you're writing down. So it's something that is tangible that they can achieve.
Mm. And so I guess the process then for you, what did that look like from a practical prescription model? Obviously, you can't separate the two.
Mm.
And it's going to always be sort of that patient-led approach of her understanding what she needs to do and how she's going to reframe her mindset around achieving those goals, particularly her movement goals.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do in that aspect for her programming and prescription?
Reviewed everything that she was doing in the week first, because to my understanding, it was a bit of an overload situation. And again, there was advice. I remember distinctly, there was one that was like, oh, I was told from this doctor that I shouldn't squat this way because my head's too forward and that puts pain on my back. Okay. I, instead of putting my own opinion and just kind of battling opinion to opinion, I said, why do you think that's important? And threw it back on them. And she didn't really have an answer. She said, well, that's sort of what I've been told. So now I know that I can't do that movement. Mm. I go, okay, well, how do you bend down and pick up something off the floor? Mm. You bend forward and you probably just bend your back and you don't even think about it. So uncovering the fact that those things are safe to do, we just have to break down some barriers, build up confidence, build up the strength in a physiological sense for them to be able to do that. So that's what I sort of did. I broke down each of the kind of components that she was doing and revising those movements and going, okay, well, this is causing some neck pain. I'm going to be conservative here and we're going to use assistance. We're going to use pillows. We're going to strengthen the neck outside of those sessions so you can be in those positions safely and have tolerance to endure the, have capacity to endure that demand that you're placing on it. Having that kind of analogy and building that up. So that's probably how I navigated initially. So again, probably wasn't even my own initial prescription too much. It was more revision of what was actually being done.
And which so. Is, and this is a leading question because I know, I'm obviously know how you operate and I know how great you are at not putting your opinion into situations with these types of clients. And I think that's an important message in that, you know, as exercise professionals, it's not always about the exercise we prescribe. Sometimes it's the education and the adjustments we make to what people are currently doing. It's the modifications of things.
Yeah.
Which I think is an underrated part of what we do.
Yeah, I feel there's like a lot of pressure on the expectations of an EP of when someone comes to you for a service. And I mean, even if you think about yourselves right now, if you go somewhere for a service and you expect, oh, this is what they're going to do for me, but then you get a whole revision of what you're currently doing, kind of a little bit from a client's perspective going, oh, that wasn't really what I was here for, but this is where you just got to make it clear at the start. And you have to be assertive in that as well and having tough conversations with yourselves. Look, you're going, look, I think what you're doing at the moment is actually, it could be a potential exacerbation of all this is going on.
Yeah.
Because you're being told one way to move, you know, freely as with your yoga and Pilates, but then you've been told you can't do that in this other one. So it's just so conflicting for them. So just setting a few things straight, but you have to establish that start, which I did do in that session. I said, look, I'm going to pick apart a few things here for you. Is that fine with you to do? And having them buy into that. And they go, yep, I want to know, because I want to do those activities. I want to be safe doing them. So I'm happy to have that revised from you to then have consistency with those sessions. So that's sort of how we went. Would you like me to go on to where we are now?
You're reading my notes. Where are you now? What's happened?
So this is going to sound like, well, everything I've done didn't do anything for her, because the path it actually took was 6 months. There's been 6 months since she's seen me. And during that time, there was going down the path of seeing a psychiatrist, a psychologist, checking into a pain clinic. So going down that path of, it got really bad for her. She was really not tolerating it. I was quite concerned, reaching out, and we just stayed in touch. She said that she was, you know, pharmacological intervention had taken its place. She was in hospital for a couple of days, if not weeks, I believe it was, to be assessed. And about, what are we now, April? So about the start of this year, came back to see me, saw it pop up in my calendar, and I went, oh, fantastic. This is going to be a really interesting session. So when she came back, immediately I thought, okay, has all that stuff that I worked on, change of mindset, reframing of things, movement differences, is that actually been any use? I was a bit concerned, but then I was like, well, if it wasn't, they wouldn't have put back in. So I started to presume a few things going into it. But what I experienced when they came back was quite enlightening. It makes me think, cool, what we do here as EPs is things that people can take away and apply to their life to make it better. She came back and said, look, been down a very hard path, but I realized a lot of the pain was from psychological and social issues.
Yeah.
There was physiological for sure, but I realized there was a lot of different family things that I hadn't known about that have come up. I was really socially isolating myself. So those things that you brought up actually made me realize it more, which made it worse probably at the start, but now coming through that journey of getting and being medicated and going through and seeing going through a chronic pain program, it all kind of started to tie together and her get a good understanding and realization of it and going, right, I need to control these aspects of my life better. And with using that BPS model, she's actually been enlightened to it and aware of it more. So by her coming back and telling me those, I was like, okay, great. So we did get some inroads. That's fantastic. And where we are now, I've seen her once a month. We are back to lifting weights in the gym. She's really safe and enjoying it, even though sometimes there's a lot of delayed onset muscle soreness, but she understands that that is the difference between that and pain. Her confidence is growing every month. She's like, oh, this is getting easy now. I feel like I can challenge myself. There's still pain there. That's the thing. Never once have I said you're going to be fixed of your pain. It's a management process and maintenance. And we're going to tinker a few things to suit that phase. But each time I sit with her now, she goes, well, physically, I feel like I'm doing pretty well. There's a bit of pain in my back after, say, this exercise or this movement, but it's not all the time. Psychologically, I'm doing X, Y, and Z. So she actually goes through each of the areas.
Yeah.
And then she goes, well, actually, because this issue at the moment psychologically is affecting me, I feel like I'm a lot more weighed down. And I do actually feel a bit more under stressed and painful from it. Socially, I stopped doing this thing because it wasn't bringing me joy and I don't want to do that. And I realized I don't have a rest day in my week. I was like, oh my goodness, we've cracked it. So she has made some really good inroads. She is starting to wean off the medications that she's on. She's under the review of a psychiatrist with that. And the picture that I'm painting for her now is as we drop down on Palexia, Lyrica, that she's some of the heavy duty medications that she was on, now off Palexia actually recently, but we're dropping down in a staggered decrease on the dosages for Lyrica. I said, your goal and your focus needs to be improve your capacity and strength so that you get this resilience and we get this capacity built to tolerate demands in your life and you being able to do whatever you wish you can do in a relatively pain-free sense and things that bring you joy.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I think with that, there's definitely a lot more that we could go into on this. And maybe it's a thing for a part two. But I think from an outside perspective, I know we've got to give a bit of a summary at the end.
Yeah.
But I think a really clear example of how, you know, as you said right at the start, your expectation of one thing, and that was twice now you've seen her sort of for the first time in a while and for the first time ever, that your expectation was X and you saw Y.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really a testament to how adaptable we have to be as practitioners and how confident we have to be in our own knowledge to go, okay, well, as this person comes in, I need to make sure that I listen first. I need to make sure that their understanding matches where it should be and where the evidence says it should be for what their condition is and what they need to go through. And then by the sounds of it, the biggest thing you're able to achieve her is that empowerment of that education in understanding what she can help herself do.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think the last thing I just wanted to focus on is I think there has been a little bit of discussion around whether pain education is actually beneficial for clients. And there's been a little bit more evidence coming out as to whether that's a debatable topic, right? I've looked recently and I've seen meta-analyses are saying, yes, in conjunction with physical therapy, it does, it definitely does support and improve outcome measures, PROMs, etc. So, and this case here is an example of that as well. Even though they had to still go through a process where they were seeing psychiatrists, psychologists, getting medicated, going through pain clinics, but the other side of it is that they've come out with a much better understanding of themselves, empowered, as he said. So my message from that is do your research, find your evidence in your pain science, and back yourself about tailoring the education appropriate to the person's presentation.
Fantastic. That's our outro. That's perfect. Thanks so much, Dan. I'd love to jump on this side of the mic more often and grill you a bit more about this. I would definitely like to follow up with how this management goes, and particularly as she starts to come further off that medication and how that transition goes. I think that's something that's going to be really interesting for a lot of people. And because obviously, ideally, we want to have as least amount of pharmacological management as possible. So I think it'd be great to see your perspective and your analysis on how that's going moving forward.
Wonderful.
Perfect.
Thanks for being nice to me on the other side of the podcast, Josh.
Not a problem. All right.
See you next time.
See you next time, Tim.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. So remember to share, like, or follow to keep updated with all our podcasts and educational resources.